We are talking about attitudes of success. There are five attitudes in the book of Proverbs and Psalms and Ecclesiastes that are very important attitudes God is trying to build into you and me. An attitude is simply our approach to life, or an approach to marriage, or approach to relationships, or our approach to problems. What is our approach going to be? The first we looked at was fear of the Lord, which means there are boundaries. As long as if you think about this stage with a fence along it, as long as I stay on the stage within the boundaries, I'm going to keep myself out of a lot of trouble that I would bring upon myself if I say, well, these boundaries really don't affect me all that much. The second one we looked at is trust in the Lord. And that doesn't mean just, oh, I believe that God exists. Trust means I'm going to respect the boundaries by staying within them. I'm going to do what God tells me to do. I'm going to trust him. When you think of the idea of trust in the Lord, think of the word outcomes. I'm going to trust him with the outcomes, whether or not they seem to be the outcomes I would want or not. So boundaries, outcomes. Today we look at humility, advancing with honor. Here, when you think of humility, you might think of the word position or the word ego. Ecclesiastes says the hearts of men are full of evil. That's a similar word there to Hebrew word to arrogance. And there is madness in their hearts while they live, and afterward they join the dead. Wisdom literature talks about three attitudes that are planted in every human heart, and they do their destructive work in us. Folly, arrogance, and madness. Folly simply means it's the attitude that says, I want what I want. It's the assumption that I think I want, is exactly what I need. And once I get it, I'll be very happy indeed. That's folly. Arrogance added on to folly says, I want what I want. And arrogance says, and I deserve it. I deserve it. I deserve to be treated a certain way. You owe me a certain thing. You should treat me better than you are. Folly, arrogance, madness. Madness says, I want what I want, and I deserve it, and though I don't want to hurt you, I will do that if I need to get what I want. That can be with our words, with our attitudes. It can be the silent treatment, all kinds of ways that we can make people pay. These three things are woven down deep into the heart of who we are, and God, in his mercy, is trying to surgically remove each one of those three things and replace them with the three things we've looked at so far. Fear of the Lord, trust in the Lord, and today is humility. Benefits of humility. Psalms and Proverbs describe several benefits I'd like to highlight. Number one is intimacy with God. Isaiah says, for this is the high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. He says, I dwell in the high and holy place, and also with him who is of a contrite and humble spirit. In other words, you know, where is God? And where can I enjoy a relationship with him? Well, he's up there, up in the heavens. And he's also here with me if I have a contrite and humble spirit. Second is wisdom. Second benefit is wisdom. Proverbs 11:2. With humility comes wisdom. Now, we like to think that we're wise and we know, you know, what to do. But wisdom is that ability to see the problems in my life and possible solutions, and to be able to discern which ones I ought to take that keep me within the boundaries. You and I, at different times in life, need to be able to navigate through very complex problems. And what's required is wisdom, not just simple solutions. 2 Samuel 22, the writer says, you save the humble, but your eyes are on the haughty to bring them low. It's been my own observation in my life and the lives of a lot of people that there are times when we get sort of backed up against the wall, we don't know what to do, and we call out to God, you know, God, help me, show me what to do, and the heavens are silent. Anybody have that experience? Now, why is that? Doesn't God want to help us? Of course he does. But one of the reasons why the heavens are sometimes silent is because I'm really not willing to do what he's going to tell me to do. I'm really calling out to him to fix the solution the way I want it fixed. And until that is changed, until my pride is changed in his goodness to me, he's going to stay silent. There's another thing I see often, too, in my life. I see this all the time at work, in my job here. There are times when I get stuck on something. There's a problem, and I can't figure out my way through the problem or around the problem, over, under the problem. I cannot figure it out until what? You've seen this multi times. Until what? Exactly. That has happened to me hundreds of times. Once I start talking about it and I start listening to other people's point of view and perspective, suddenly there's wisdom. What's the problem? The problem is if I won't humble myself before God and I won't humble myself before the people around me, God is going to say, you know, you're just going to sit with this problem until you do something important, which is humble yourself. Number three, the promise is wealth and honor. The fear of the Lord teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor. If your reputation is sagging, this is item number one to check. Proverbs 22:4, the reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. And the other benefit I want to highlight today is enduring exaltation. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted. You know how we like to exalt ourselves? We have our little brag sheet right here. And in any particular given conversation, we love to pull out our little brag sheet and highlight maybe one or two items that we've been doing well in. We do this so often, we hardly are even aware that we're doing it. And what the writer says here, is that you can be sure that God's going to say, I'm going to try to make it in your life so that you don't ever pull that sheet out. Our brag sheet. Now, what is humility? On the inside of your handout, humility is a voluntary attitude of respect and submission to another. A voluntary attitude of respect and submission to somebody else. Nobody else can humble you. Only you can humble you. One of my favorite stories about childhood and the folly that lies within us is a little boy who was in class, and this kid was a terror. He wasn't going to obey anybody. Didn't obey his mom, didn't obey his dad, didn't obey his teacher. And it was time to do some reading. And so the teacher had everybody come in and sit down. Well, this kid didn't want to sit down. The teacher said, Johnny, you need to sit down. We're going to read. No. Johnny, it's time to read. Sit down. No. Johnny, I've talked to your dad. And he told me that if you were disobedient, that all I needed to do was call him and you were going to get a spanking. Johnny sized up the situation. And he slowly sat down. But as he sat down, he said these words. Teacher, I'm sitting down on the outside, but I'm standing up on the inside. Humility. It's a voluntary attitude of respect and submission to another. Humility involves three things: position, respect, and serving. In other words, in my relationship with you, or my relationship with my wife, or my relationship with my kids, or my relationship with my friends, or with my neighbors, I'm going to, when it's important, I'm going to take a lower position. I'm going to respect the wishes of others, the desires of others, as much as I can over my own wishes and desires. That is a fight. I really don't like doing that at the moment. And I'm going to be serving, meaning I'm going to be trying to do something, some action, that involves your best interests as opposed to mine. That's humility. Now, humility has some painful opposites in the book of Proverbs, especially. And there are three big responses against humility that are highlighted. The first is pride. And there are some ways that the proud person experiences consequences. The first is being brought low. Proverbs 29:23 says, a man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will obtain honor. Now, sometimes this being brought low happens fairly quickly. But on the bigger things, it seems to me that this bringing low happens a lot of times over a long, protracted period of time. This can be with our kids as we're raising them, or it can be in a marriage, or it can be your work attitude towards the people you work with or towards your boss. As many of you know, my wife teaches kindergarten, and she was had her reading groups this week, and she was sitting at the table with the white birds. You know, there's the blue birds, the red birds, and the white birds. The lowest group, and there were seven or eight kids around the circle table, and she said, "Now, who wants to read first?" And one of the little five-year-old boys, with a look of utter disdain and disgust on his face and in his voice, said, looked around the table and said, "Well, Mrs. Gatchel, I guess I better read first. Nobody else here can read." We just love to feel superior about something. Sometimes we look at our accomplishments and we look at others who haven't accomplished what we have and we love to feel superior. Or sometimes we think about what we've accumulated and we love to feel superior to others who haven't accumulated as much as us. Romans says, "I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith which God has assigned to him." When it has to do with position, how should I think of myself? He says, not more highly. Now, maybe you think, "Well, Seth, I don't think that's really my problem. Because when I think about my life, I'm the opposite. It's like I have this terrible self-esteem, this poor self-image. I always think I'm just such a loser." Well, in reality, that's just the flip side of the same coin of pride. Because what that says is that down deep, you just are certain that you're capable of so much more than what you've done so far. It's the same animal that needs to be killed. Well, what should be my position? The cross makes that clear. I am a sinner before God. I am wayward and rebellious, but at the same time, I am also wonderfully loved and wanted by God in relationship with him. That's our core identity as Christians. Being brought low. Second consequence of pride is certain trouble. I am certain to bring trouble upon myself. The Lord detests all the proud of heart. Be sure of this, they will not go unpunished. Now, we looked at this with the fear of the Lord. If I determine that I'm going to cross the boundaries and go out here and do what I want to do, no matter what, because I know better, I am foolish, I want what I want, and I am arrogant, I deserve it, then you can be sure if God loves you and me, he's going to bring pushback in our life. He's going to make sure that we learn that doesn't work. We call this stress, or sometimes we call it trouble that we bring upon ourselves. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Now, if I say to you the phrase haughty spirit, who do you know that has a haughty spirit? No names, please. You probably do have a face that comes to mind. And it's likely not your face. It's likely the face of somebody you know who's prouder than you or more arrogant than you. But a haughty spirit simply means things like, I deserve it. Or I deserve better treatment. Or I should be entitled to. Or why should I have to put up with? All of those are reflections of a haughty spirit. Money problems is another painful consequence. Better to be a nobody and yet have a servant than pretend to be somebody and have no food. A pastor friend of mine was trying to help one of the folks in the church put together a budget. And this guy was barely making ends meet. And he was meeting with my pastor friend Harold. And this is one of the verses they went over. And the fellow he was trying to help said, "Oh my gosh, that verse, that's it." And Harold said, "What do you mean? Better to be a nobody and yet have a servant or an employee is the idea than pretend to be somebody and have no food." He said, "This past week, I put $400 worth of clothes on my credit card, but I really didn't need those clothes." And then in a moment of realization, he said, "I just wanted to be cool." His problem was not a money problem, wasn't an accounting problem, wasn't a job problem, wasn't even a budget problem. It was a heart problem, a pride problem. Proverbs 15:25, "The Lord tears down the proud man's house." Sometimes God just directly does this. I remember talking to a guy, in fact, I've had several friends who had a car that they might as well have gone out in the driveway or garage and worshiped. They bought this car, and you could tell it had become the apple of their eye. They loved this car. They felt so important when they were behind the wheel of that car driving. And I remember one of my friends walked out to his car one morning, and somebody had taken a key all the way down the side of that car. When I saw that, I thought about this verse. The Lord tears down the proud man's house. I knew another guy who had a car he just loved. He adored, he worshiped. You could just tell it in his eyes, his attitude. And that thing got mashed. His little tin god crumpled. Now, when this happens to you and I, what we tend to do is go, "God, how could you let this happen?" What should be surprising is that it took as long for God to do that as it did. The second major opposite of humility in Proverbs is the word mockery. Mockery means ridicule. And if you want some good pictures of this, just watch sitcoms at night, because they are filled with mockery. Often towards one another, especially towards people in authority. Parents or children with their parents, husbands and wives, people at work with the boss. And of course, we Christians, we are definitely lumped in there who get lots of mockery. What are some of the consequences? Number one is God intervenes. He mocks proud mockers and gives grace to the humble. Now, it is very easy in our culture to learn how to have a tongue that is razor sharp. In the home I grew up with, we called this humorous put-downs. Now, it was always humorous to the one doing the put-downing. But over time, we never did quite learn. It wasn't so humorous to be on the other end of those things. And all of my growing up years, I continued to sharpen that tongue and sharpen that tongue. And man, I could cut somebody with a Ginsu knife, laughing all the way. Now, what I didn't realize was I was training most of the important people in my life, unbeknownst to me, that this is how you should relate to me. The Seth Gatchel Relationship Training School. And suddenly I got to a place where I didn't really like getting the same kind of medicine I was dishing out. And when I got upset about that several times, I received heaps of mocking that was due. Number two, suffering. If you are wise, your wisdom will reward you. Mockers will suffer alone. Penalties are prepared for mockers. You make this a way of life in your home, you are going to have chaos over a period of time. I finally came to a conclusion about the end of my first year in marriage that I was never going to use a humorous put-down towards Mindy ever again. I will do it only occasionally if I am absolutely certain that she knows that I am still for her and this is just sharing a humorous moment. Those are still pretty rare occasions. But for the most part, for the last 32 years, if I'm going to make a humorous put down in my home, I'm going to make it against me. I've discovered that everybody in my family likes that. In our family, we call those Seth stories. The third major opposite of humility is the phrase self-exaltation, or exalting yourself is the idea. And we do this by raising our rank up, or our reputation up, or our status up, or our privilege up, or we pull out our little brag sheet. There's nothing wrong with rank and respect and status if it's earned. But if you do this yourself, you get out your own little jack and start jacking yourself up, you're asking for trouble. Do nothing from selfishness or conceit, but in humility consider others better than themselves. Each of you should look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. There are lots of opportunities for people to serve. Serve in church, serve in your home, serve at work, serve in your neighborhood. But we really don't like serving all that much. And one of the reasons we don't like serving all that much is it doesn't feel very important. And really, I'm much more important than this makes me feel. Now, Seth, if you want to give me something important at church, then I'll do that. Well, no thanks. Part of what is involved in serving is the humbling of ourselves. One of the consequences is public embarrassment. Do not claim a place among great men. It's better for the king to say, come up here, than for him to humiliate you before a nobleman. You're at some banquet, not sure where to sit. You go up to a certain table and you start to sit down there, and somebody comes rushing over and says to you, I'm sorry, sir, you can't sit here. These are reserved for the VIP folks. Now, what happens inside of you? We get all huffy and puffy. Oh, we're graceful. Oh, okay, yeah, no problem, no problem. I'll find a seat. There's a seat way back in the back for you, sir. Okay, got it. You know, inwardly, it just grinds on us. Who is he to tell me where to sit? Don't they know how important I am? We have those things going on in our head all the time. Conflict in relationships. If you have played the fool and exalted yourself, clap your hands over your mouth. Stop this train as soon as you can. Stirring up anger produces strife. Now, having coached 10 years of boys' baseball, 10 years of girls' soccer, I used to hear this a lot on my sideline or near the dugout. It'd be something like, I don't know why he's making that decision. I don't know why he's putting that kid in. I don't know why he decided to pinch hit that kid. And the inference is, if I was the manager, if I was the coach, that happens every game. I told my parents, I said, you are more than welcome to mutter, but you are not more than welcome to mutter on my bench or on the sideline. If you want to mutter, please go down to the left field foul pole or the corner flag in soccer, take your chair, plant yourself there, and mutter to your heart's content. Because that is like a cancer to all the other kids and parents who are sitting there. If you've ever had a kid in a sport, you know that's true. It starts with muttering. I just under my breath. Can I say what I want to say? Not if somebody else can hear it. Conflict in their relationship. Sometimes somebody comes up to you and they pull out their brag sheet. And then there's something inside of you that just wants to sort of put them in their place. Now, maybe you've tried that. I know in earlier years I've tried that. You know what I discovered? There are very few people that are interested in being put in their place. That's not a high agenda item with them. I end up just sort of getting pie in my face through that. Proverbs 27 says, let another praise you and not your own mouth, someone else, not your own lips. Well, I just want to be recognized now. What's wrong with that? On the backside of your handout. How do you know if you're humble? You get tested on this constantly. You have a misunderstanding with your wife or one of your kids or somebody at work. It takes someone to humble themselves to start to unravel that misunderstanding. Is that someone you? There's a miscommunication between you and somebody in your home or at work or in church or your life group in your neighborhood. It takes one person to start to unravel that miscommunication, somebody with humility. Is that you? You have a conflict, an argument, a disagreement about something. And neither of you are speaking to each other. It takes one person to start to unravel that. Somebody with humility. Is that you? Humility is a very, very integral quality that you want to carry with you. How do you know if you're humble? You can think of it in three different sort of arenas. Think of it first with your relationship with God. The word I want to think of is, I am a creature. I am not creator. God made me. He gave me life. I owe my very existence to Him. And because Jesus died on the cross, I belong to Him. I do not belong to me. I belong to Him. I am a creature. I am dependent. I am not independent. And one of the things that means is, in your handout, I am undemanding of God. I go through a tough situation, I call out to God, and God is responding in a way that I don't wish He would. I cannot say, I don't like that, what's wrong with you? Something else needs to happen here. How come you're not jumping in? Sort of like when you go to a restaurant and you just sort of have bad service. You just kind of sit there with a frump. I'm never coming back here again. This service is terrible. I'm a creature. And I'm undemanding of God, and my role is to serve Him, not to get Him to serve me. My fundamental position. My job is to serve Him. Your job is to serve Him. It's not to get Him to serve you. And our example is Jesus Christ, Philippians 2. Your attitude should be the same as Jesus Christ, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. I have to have this position. I have to have people treat me like I'm God. He wasn't like that. He made Himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, He humbled Himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. That's my example. That's your example. Second is, what about those who God puts in authority over you? And here the word is, I'm a follower. This means the government. Oh, goody. This means police officers. This means if I decide I'm going to live in a community association, the people on the board. If I don't like that, then I need to move. It means if you're in school, a teacher. It means if you're a kid, a parent. And there is a certain amount of submission that needs to go on between a husband and a wife. 1 Peter says, in the same way, be submissive to those who are older. My role is to be a follower. I'm a creature of God. I'm a follower of the people who are in authority over me. And then third, with my peers, servant. My position. That's as opposed to, don't they know who I am? Don't they know what I can do? I'm here to serve. Clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. And Romans says, honor one another above yourselves. Okay, now maybe you think about this and you think, you know, wow, Seth, I have been in a lot of conflicts lately. I have been in some situations where there are some hurt feelings, my hurt feelings and some other person's hurt feelings. There have been some miscommunications and misunderstandings. I really can't remember the last time I was the first one to humble myself to make a difference here. This just doesn't come rolling out of us, does it? Oh, goody, another opportunity to be humble. This is something you and I have to choose to do. It's an attitude that we take on. This is who I'm going to be in the relationships with the people in my life. With God, the people over me, the people under me, the people who are my peers. How do you learn humility? We learn humility one of two ways. A lot of the verses we've said have said, humble yourself. So the first way we learn humility is through practice. Practice. Now, there are plenty of opportunities to practice, right? Plenty of opportunities to humble yourself. Somebody else's wishes, somebody else's desires, somebody else's way of solving a problem that wouldn't be your way to solve. There are lots of opportunities to humble yourself. Practice is the way the Bible recommends you learn humility. But if you decide, I just don't want to do that, then you get choice number two. And that's suffering. God will intervene in this situation because pride is so deadly to you and to the people in your life. He says, you may try to live that way, but you're going to have a hard time and you're going to create a lot of trouble with other people and with yourself. And though you are, Seth, bullheaded and stiff-necked, I'm going to do everything I can to put an end to that. We call that suffering. In the book of Deuteronomy, God reflects back with the people on the 40 years in the wilderness. Chapter 8, God led you all these 40 years in the desert to humble you and to test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. He humbled you, causing you to hunger and then feeding you to teach you that man does not live on bread alone. Oh, I'm doing just fine. I don't need God. Or God's there. I'm glad he's there, but I know what to do. He's going to make sure that he's going to humble us enough that hopefully that attitude is stopped. Man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Now, even though our culture really doesn't have an appreciation for humility, and I'd have to say that even as Christians, we don't often have that much appreciation for this quality either. This verse does still ring true. Proverbs 29:2. When the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. There is something still within us, though we may not aspire to be a humble people, when we see somebody else do something well and they rise because of their humility, you know what people do? They clap. They applaud. There's something there that's commendable. But when people rise and they've done it out of their own ego and pride, then here he says the people groan, we boo. We may not boo outwardly, but we boo inwardly. Humility. How you doing on this quality? Is this one of these attitudes that you're taking on to life, putting the backpack with you? Fear of the Lord? Boundaries. Trust in the Lord? Outcomes. Humility. Position. Let's pray together. Father, we thank you that you do not leave us to our pride and our arrogance, our folly and our madness, because we will certainly make a complete mess of things given enough time. And we are... Arrogance is such a strong part of our life that while we can recognize it in others, we rarely recognize it in ourselves. It just becomes part of our landscape, part of how life ought to be, how people should treat us, and why we're not getting what people should do for us. Father, thank you that you are working day and night to attack that mountain of arrogance that lies within us. and you are trying to bring about a heart transformation of humility. And Father, we need you. Because even though we know we need humility, we're still going to put up a fight. None of us likes that process. And we really don't even like that outcome. We thank you for the Lord Jesus, who humbled himself, the only one who didn't need to, and came and died for us, that our hearts might be renewed and changed. We thank you for the work he is doing in us and the work that he will continue to do that's needed.